we're riding on the freedom train.
That's Eric Bibb from last year's Riding album. Since then, Eric has released a live record recorded at the Scala Theater in Stockholm, Sweden, and he's setting out for a solo tour down under, beginning in Auckland on May 9th. A longtime resident of Sweden, Eric's dad was a singer and an activist back in the 1960s. So we begin our conversation with thoughts on the state of U.S. politics as it stands today.
If anybody asks you where I am.
If you look out there at what's going on in the States and you look at what's going on in the world at large, you come to the conclusion, maybe, that we seem to be rewinding our progress. We seem to be retreating into some kind of back-assed, way of living. We seem to be increasing our problems. The divisiveness between groups seems to be intensifying, and it makes me, I'm a child of the 60s, like you, man. I grew up thinking that we were definitely going to turn this stuff around. It's going to take some time. People have been at it for a long time, but there's a movement afoot that's strong, and people are believing that we can make a change. Right now, I think it's just a question of accepting, Marty, that we're in that part of the spiral, and it's probably going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, it looks that way, unfortunately.
Yeah, it does. Especially when you have a situation in the States coming up on a presidential election with it looking like the most absurd circus you could imagine. America has always been dealing with the problems created by a brutal past. But we seem to be really losing it big time.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's astounding.
And you get
so,
it is. Yeah. And it's so very different perspective when you're watching it from outside of the States as well,
yeah.
I found.
Yes, I'm sure. You're too close to it and you don't really see it for what it is, but the trend is really alarming.
Right. Mm-hmm. So how do you deal with that when you go back and play there?
Mm-hmm. Well, for one thing, I haven't toured in the States in quite a while. I was in New York for a radio program recently on the back of the Grammys. But I haven't toured the States since before the pandemic, probably.
Ah.
Yeand, it wasn't ever my biggest territory. I have, Australia's big, England's big, France is big, Germany, Europe in general, Canada, I've toured a lot in. I've toured the States, but it's not, like I said, my biggest territory. But I watch the news. My relatives still live there. I read voraciously, mostly history. I love to understand how we've gotten to where we've gotten. So I'm aware of what's going on to a large degree, and I just see a whole collapsing of a lot of things. Unity between different groups who once were united in some kind of common cause, all that kind of stuff seems to be really declining, and the other forces of fear, as I would call them, are ramping up, what you can do is realize is that our times have been a part of our experience before, the Depression, World Wars. We'll get through this, but I think we're going to see a lot of suffering, man.
Right, yeah. So it's interesting because, like you say, it seems the appeal to your music or where you're presenting it is not aimed at the U.S., but it's very American music, obviously. You're singing about things that happened in the States. The blues is, arguably very an American idiom, so...
Totally American medium. I'm close to that culture, and I always will be. The music cemented me to those roots. So it's also something, that whole Americana thing, whether it's blues or country or whatever you want to call it, it's music that has enchanted the whole world. There's lots of music, lots of different kinds of music. But this Americana type of music, particularly with blues at its foundation, has been exported to a degree that I can't think of any other music genre that has that kind of popularity. And I attribute it to the fact that this music has a power, being born of the people and the place that it is born of, has a power that is universal, that has basically lifted people up whenever they hear it, whether it's Negro spirituals or Howlin' Wolf or, you know, Bessie Smith or Beyonce. You know, there's something in this music that obviously people resonate to, no matter where they're from.
Yep. So you mentioned that you played quite a bit in Australia. Have you been to New Zealand at all, very often?
Yes, not often. I've been there twice. Uh-huh. And I loved it. I loved it. And I'm so happy that we're beginning this tour with New Zealand before going over to Oz, because I really want to come back.
Right. Yeah. Excellent. So your most recent album is the live album.
That's right.
So how does that relate to what we're going to hear and see when you do come down here?
Right. Well, I'm not with the band this time. This is a solo tour, which I'm very happy about.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's logistically easier, and it's a way for me to even get closer to the fans. So I love it. I love performing solo. I'll be with my wife as well, who's a wonderful singer. But the Live at Scala album that you mentioned is one of my most ambitious recordings, you could say, even though it was live and it took place one night in Stockholm. But we have an amazing array of musicians, including a string quartet. And quite a few of the songs on that album are songs that are in my solo repertoire, so people will hear them, yeah.
Right. So I'm kind of interested in hearing about the night of that record was recorded, because I listened to it today, and I have to admit, I was surprised when I heard the applause at the end of this one or two of the tracks, because I felt like I was kind of being sucked into something else. And then I was like, holy mackerel, this is right. This is a live thing.
Yes. Marty, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that takes me to an amazing person. Glenn Scott is my musical director and producer of
right.
many years. And he's also a multi-instrumentalist who's part of the band. But he's done such a phenomenal job of recording and mixing this album that it's like you're there, and people comment on it. Also, he's so meticulous as a musical director, who has guided the wonderful band that we have in such a way so that, it sounds almost at times like a studio album, you know?
Yeah. And so what did you, was that a special show with all those extra instruments and players and all that? What did you have to do to get ready for that?
Well, the most challenging part, I think, was for the first time performing with that live string quartet.
All right.
We had wonderful arrangements. We had arrangements from recordings for a full orchestra. We had to reorient them to a string quartet, then rehearse with the string quartet. We had 3 days of rehearsal, intense, and then we had a one-off show. We weren't even able to do two shows as we originally hoped to do. So the pressure was great. You know, we've had all this preparation, but basically you have one shot at getting it right, because you've invested in recording equipment, filming equipment. So it's like the hot seat, you know. It was pretty intense.
Yeah.
I'm very pleased with the result. Very, very pleased. It's like, wow, were we able to do that under that kind of pressure? That says something, you know.
Yeah. So I see... in part of the set list that's, that becomes the album, you do Ludbelly, you do Walter Vinson, but then up against those are your own original tunes like Rosewood and The World's Got the Blues. Do you have to, how do you justify, not justify is the wrong word, but how do you kind of, in your own mind, make them work together?
Yeah, they work together in my mind just because they're an integral part of who I am. So if that works, then it means, you know, I work.
Yeah.
It means that, you know, I'm really just trying to tell my story at the same time that I'm trying to tell a collective story. And the songs that I choose and the order in which I put them is not random. Obviously, I'm trying to make a good show in terms of tempo and all that kind of stuff. But I'm also trying to tell a complete story. as opposed to just firing individual songs at people. So that's always a challenge and always a nice challenge, you know, trying to make something unified. Yeah. But these days, I've always felt that more and more that the traditional song forms, you mentioned Lead Belly, but those old songs, Mole in the Ground, Bring Me a Little Water, Sylvie, Going Down the Road Feeling Bad, the structure of those songs are tried and true. And more my own songwriting is coming closer to those traditional forms, even closer than ever, because it's always been an influence. So I'm satisfied to basically be a carrier honor of a tradition that is so rich, you know, just to be included in that number of wonderful troubadours, whether it's John Hurt or Dave Von Ronk or, you know, Doc Watson or, you know, I mean, it's just, or Lead Belly.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful tradition. I'm honored to be part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you talk about telling these stories, it's more than just that. I mean, there are stories like in Rosewood. It's a story that sounds like it needs to be told, and you do a beautiful job of telling it. So maybe you can give me a little background on why you decided that you needed to sing that song and write that song.
They say the whole thing started with Fanny Taylor's lie. That spark lit the flame. Fear and hatred fed the fire. Truly, it started centuries ago. Ships with human cargo chained down below.
I was originally looking at reports about the Tulsa massacre.
Right.
I later wrote a song called Tulsa Town. But before I wrote Tulsa Town, I was researching this massacre that took place in Oklahoma, and I stumbled across a reference to a similar massacre in Rosewood, Florida,
right,
2 years later. And then I found an eyewitness account, somebody who had survived the Rosewood massacre. I found her interview online, and that spurred the song Rosewood. And I realized that I have a talent for absorbing an historical event and turning it into a song. This seems to be something that I've been prepared for, and I do it with joy. I love writing historical songs, particularly, Marty, since there is a movement afoot to basically delete from the historical record important, uncomfortable stories.
Right.
You know, this is atrocious. There are people who are burning books in certain quarters. You know, this is wild. So at least there will be a song. If they delete it from the historical print record, songs have a way of spreading themselves. So I'm happy to be in service of keeping history in focus so that we learn something. You know?
Right. And both of us, I grew up in the 60s, and we thought what we heard was, you know, the deal. But, you know, have you seen Killers of the Flower Moon, the film?
You know, I haven't seen the film, but I did read the book, and I was enthralled. And this is the kind of thing, exactly what I'm talking about. America's history is rich and it's bloody, and yeah. We don't know the half of it, bro. We don't know the half of it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I'm not going to go further on that.
But okay.
I'm just going to say, you know, there's some dastardly deeds in that history, man.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yeah. So living overseas, what have you kind of gleaned about the human condition from where you are now? This is a big question, I realize.
I love the question. What I've, and that's a good word, gleaned from experience. First of all, I got to say, musicians who travel around and even expatriate, as it were, start to live their lives in another country than the one they were born in. They have been blessed, as we have been, with an opportunity to do our own, research on the ground. Instead of accepting cliches about groups of people, they're like this, they're that. We are actually in the middle of several different cultures, and being able to absorb up close over time another culture and be able to make comparisons to your own gives you a sense of humanity that is more universal than maybe what you would have had you not experienced this. You know, it's not a question of education and book learning. You know, you can go to Harvard. If you've never left the United States, your view of the world is obviously going to be colored by that lack.
Yep.
So all I can say is we are truly blessed who have been able to spread what we love about our culture to other people and have them do the same for us, introduce us to another way, and realizing that it's really quite connected.
Right.
We are more connected than anything else. It's an interesting perspective, as you say. But I consider myself, as you must as well, something of a citizen of the world. You know, I've had a chance to travel. And I don't really have an allegiance to a nation state, you know.
Well, that's the thing, because you probably get it too. People hear you speak and they go, well, where are you from?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, well, exactly. And for me, like I was born in England, believe it or not, but only briefly, raised in the States, moved to New Zealand. You have your American accent. You're living in Sweden. And it's kind of, in some ways, it's a bit of an annoyance because people make all these assumptions as soon as they hear you speak.
Yes, it's true. You don't know anybody's story. You could be looking at Jesus Christ on the subway. You know what I mean? It's like... We make up stories about people because of what we see, but often we're way off, you know.
Indeed. So music-wise, you had Riding Out last year. You've got the live album. What are you thinking of next?
Well, it's already in the pipeline. My producer and I are mad about it. We just keep making music, and then we have to figure out how to release it and when to release it and all that kind of stuff. But it's kind of a constant factory of music making that we got going on with very few pauses. So we did an album called, this is just between you and me because we haven't officially, but we have recorded at Peter Gabriel's studio in the real world.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, very cool place. Very cool place. And we have a studio album that's, going to come out obviously next year,
maybe this year.
Who knows? You know, but you know, I remember Marty when I was growing up in those years, teenage years. Some of my favorite bands or artists were putting out two and maybe even three albums a year.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, the Beatles and the Stones were cranking them out back in the mid '60s, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So I get that flow, you know, you can do it. It's the marketing people who are asking us for bigger gaps between albums, you know.
Yeah, yeah. What do they know?
They want to. Exactly, there you go.